The Atlanta Falcons, they did something crazy last night. At number 8, they selected Michael Penix at quarterback in a draft where we expected 6 quarterbacks to go early in the draft. Not a surprise, but it is a surprise when you just signed Kirk Cousins to a $180 million contract to play quarterback. It's crazy. I don't think a lot of people are going to talk about it honestly because the Falcons have a black general manager and a black head coach. We're going to talk about it honestly on Fearless because that's what we do. Welcome to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I'm Jason Whitlock, your host. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining me. I'm sure many of you have said, man, Whitlock looks good. What's going on? Bad news to report. As soon as I'm done taping this, I got to go to a friend's funeral here in Nashville. That's why I'm, look a little nice today. Anyway, put up a prayer for my friend Irv. I'm sure he's in heaven. Check out this exclusive. Extra Fearless content on Blaze TV. Go to blazetv.com/fearless. Use the promo code Fearless, and you can save $20 on your yearly subscription. That's the best thing you can do if you're a fan of Fearless, is become a Blaze TV subscriber. Also, we need to thank our great friends, our good friends at Good Ranchers. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers is locking in your price until 2026. When you subscribe to any of their boxes of 100% American meat and seafood, use my promo code Fearless at goodranchers.com and save 10%. Thank you, Good Ranchers. We need to be good to Good Ranchers because they're very good to us. All right, let's roll out to Los Angeles, bring in our main man, your main man, the person I have to tolerate, Steve Kim, to help me talk about last night's NFL draft. The Atlanta Falcons were the shock and the surprise of a draft that really didn't have much drama. Caleb Williams went number 1, of course, to the Bears, and he painted his pinkies and showed up with a girlfriend or a beard, whichever you prefer. that was fascinating. But more fascinating than anything is what the Atlanta Falcons did, having spent $180 million on Kirk Cousins. They go out and get Michael Penix, the often injured Washington quarterback. I think he finished 2nd in the Heisman Trophy. Anyway, let's watch Atlanta head coach Raheem Morris explain the reasons for drafting Michael Penix.
How do these two quarterbacks balance each other in a way that you're confident they can learn and grow off of each other?
It was really the young man's responsibility to learn from Kirk. You're talking about a guy who's had a lot of success in the National Football League, and you're talking about a young man coming into the league. He's going to be hungry. He's going to be eager to learn and just have a certain desire that it takes to sit back and learn. And, I watched Kirk do it, and now it was Michael's time to do it. And it's just like you can't put that on Kirk. Kirk's job is just to be a professional. Kirk, God will show him the way by how he goes about his daily business every single day. And Michael will get a chance to see that firsthand, and I think that's really a good thing for a young player. It excites us to add a guy of this caliber, to add a guy that we felt like could be our future. Like you said, you don't know what round is going to come in. They come in all type of rounds. But for us, it's starting to happen a little bit quicker now, and things are happening faster. And, Green Bay model was something that we talked about, and it's been proven to be right last year. So hopefully we'll be right with them.
All right, so they leaned heavily into the Green Bay model, which, of course, Green Bay had Brett Favre, and they drafted Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers set for 2 or 3 years and then replaced Brett Favre. They have Aaron Rodgers. They draft Jordan Love. He sits for 2 or 3 years, has a good first year as a starter last year. Do you buy the Green Bay model excuse here for the Atlanta Falcons?
In theory, I do, Jason, but there is a little bit of a difference. From what I recall, Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love were both drafted in the 20s. And in fact, Aaron Rodgers had one of the famous green room moments as he fell like a rock. I mean, he was the presumptive number one pick, him or Alex Smith, and then he dropped all the way to the 20s. And Jordan Love struggled a little bit in his last year in college, so he dropped. you know, again, these things matter, the nuances of these type of situations. They didn't take him at number 8. Now, Jason, I am not exactly Asian Mel Kiper, although a lot's been said about my hair in the recent weeks. But here's the difference. I saw a lot of mock drafts from people that I respect and people that know football, that watch the All-22. I like Michael Penix. He was probably one of my favorite players last year. But many of those mocks had him in the 20s. I actually saw a couple of them that said he might go in the edge of the second round. So I don't even think it's the question about the Green Bay plan. The question that I have is, did you actually overdraft a quarterback? Now, generally, when it comes to a quarterback, there's a theory. If you like your quarterback, take your quarterback. Don't move back because you never know what could happen. But that's the big difference, though. The other two guys that we mentioned in the Green Bay plan were drafted in the 20s, not in the top 10.
So their argument is that, hey, we had him as the number two quarterback in this draft after Jaden Daniels. And so they really liked this guy and thought they were getting a bargain and a value. I'm going to give you the other side, the cynical argument here. That literally, you look at it, Fontenot and the general manager, I think I said that name right, and obviously Raheem Morris, the head coach, they just widen their window, in my view. It's like, hey, we can run Kirk Cousins out here for 2 or 3 years. If it doesn't work, well, we haven't even gotten to our real future, this quarterback we draft. And so we'll give our – we got to give Michael Penix 2 years. And then, so after 4 or 5 years, now you can properly evaluate whether we're the right combination in doing this. I'm telling you, there's so much money to be made in these head coaching and GM jobs and NFL jobs that people start thinking about their own survival more than what's best for the team in the present. Kirk Cousins signed in Atlanta because they're in win-now mode. And he does need to have postseason success because he really hasn't had it in Washington. He hadn't had it in Minnesota. He needs to have it. He goes there, $180 million deal. It's Atlanta. It's win-now. They have the 8th pick in the draft with all receivers on the table, real talent that could help him win now and perform now. And they don't do it. They get a quarterback who's 24 years old, lot of injuries. And I believe the general manager said last night that, hey, this would be a great problem. If Michael Penix doesn't play for 4 or 5 years, it's because we're having all of this success. And so they're throwing out scenarios where Michael Penix may not be a starter until age 28, 29. That's crazy. This is... I don't like this decision. I'm just, you can't give a guy $180 million, $90 million guaranteed with his track record. Talk about winning now. Because it's not even everybody ran. What's Kirk Cousins think? It's not just Kirk Cousins. What's the rest of that locker room think? Hey, we want to win now. We have a lot of talent here in Atlanta. We want to win now. How come you didn't go get us a guy that can help us win right now?
Well, Jason, first of all, as to what the Ned Flanders of NFL quarterbacks probably thought, so I guess they called them as they're on the clock. This is what I'm thinking, Kirk Cousins thought. Gosh darn it. I hate this. This really teased me off. That's probably what he thought. Okay, he's a very nice guy. But why can't you do both? Let's be honest about Kirk Cousins. Very good NFL starter. Not elite, but solid. We know what the baseline is with him. Generally about 4,000 yards, 30-some-odd touchdowns. You'll win double-digit games, and then you pack up for Cancun right around early January. There's not a lot of postseason success. But here's a variable with Kirk Cousins. He's into the twilight of his career. This is probably the last deal he's ever going to sign. He's into his mid-30s, and he's coming off an injury. So maybe I'll take the other approach. Maybe they're trying to do both. Win now with Cousins. You have a window. But develop your future quarterback. And it's been done before. I still remember Steve McNair. And again, I know it's a little bit different because he was younger. When Steve McNair was drafted, I believe, in the top 5, I believe, after the 1994 season, in his first 2 years in Houston, I don't even think he got 175 throws He was basically redshirted by Jeff Fisher. And I believe, if I recall correctly, the starting quarterback was a steady veteran by the name of Chris Chandler. And then by the third year, that's when the McNair era began as they shifted their franchise over to Tennessee. So it's been done before, Jason. I mean, look, the age is a factor. I actually do worry about Penix being into his mid-20s because the history has been, going all the way back to Chris Wankie, Brandon Whedon, these guys, if they're not starting by age 25, it turns out they've already reached their ceiling. So that is a risk, no doubt about it.
Steve, what about the whole theory of you draft a rookie quarterback and build a team around him while he's on his rookie deal,
and that
salary cap and all that, and so they've just blown all that up. They got a $180 million quarterback. Now they got a rookie quarterback, and by the time they want to turn to this rookie, he's going to be off of his, or very close to being off his rookie deal, and really with a gun to his head when they turn it over to him, because he'll be playing for money, and he'll be replacing a quarterback that statistically you would think would have done a good job. Just think about what Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, what they accomplished by age 24. And we're talking about, well, Michael Penix, you know, age 26, 27, we're going to turn him loose. If Kirk Cousins were at the end of a four-year contract and they had done what Kansas City, the Kansas City model is the model you should be pointing to. They had Alex Smith. They went and got their young quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, set him for a year, then turned him loose on the NFL after a year of being trained by Alex Smith. That's the model. Patrick Mahomes, Green Bay, they win one Super Bowl every, 15, 20 years. Patrick Mahomes has appeared in four. And has he won three Super Bowls now?
Yes,
I should know that. Yeah, I think he's won three Super Bowls now. Sometimes when you try to prove how smart you are and you try to outsmart everybody, you end up making yourself look very foolish. That's what I think has happened here. Yeah.
All right, here's my question. Let's say Penix was drafted by the Falcons. Let's say they moved back. They rolled the dice. And he was the 24th pick and not the 8th. Would you have a different view of this deal?
Yeah, I loved your point early on. I can't disagree with that. If they had taken him closer to the second round than at the top of the current draft. And again, there's all these receivers. There's these offensive linemen these tackles that can be your left or right tackle for 12 straight years. Look at what Detroit has done with, what is his name, Penei Sewell. He's a building block. And I love what Jim Harbaugh did and said, look, man, Joe Alt, who I got to watch his dad, John, play for the Kansas City Chiefs. Joe Alt, he's a weapon. Offensive linemen are weapons, too. I don't know. It's going to be hard for me to Yep, go ahead.
I'm not a capologist, but I've read some stuff on Cousins' contract. You know the way these work. These things are sometimes backloaded, sometimes they're front-loaded. So the cap hits may be early, they might be late. And if they structured it the right way, maybe by the last couple of years, if you're going to jettison Cousins, maybe it's not that much of a cap hit. There are the devils in the details.
Perhaps. And look, these owners and the way we've printed so much money, these guys have no problem giving away $90 million and guaranteed that they've made so much money since COVID and all this craziness that money just doesn't mean what it used to. Steve, before I move on to another topic, because I want to talk about these other quarterbacks and get your thoughts. There were six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. Before I do that, I want to talk about and take care of our great friends at Balance of Nature. Making sure you have fruits and vegetables in your diet is important for maintaining a healthy diet. But it can also be difficult, especially if you're busy. The average person doesn't even eat half of the recommended servings in a day. That's a huge gap in nutrition. And inflation has seriously increased the cost of fruits and vegetables. That's why Balance of Nature provides an on-the-go solution, and they haven't raised their prices for 10 years. Their proprietary blend of 31 fruits and vegetables come in easy-to-swallow capsules and will give your body so much of the nourishment it needs. Imagine trying to eat 31 different kinds of produce in a single day. That's what you're going to get with Balance of Nature fruits and veggies. When you go to balanceofnature.com, you'll get 35% off plus $10 off any additional sets with your first order as a preferred customer by using my discount code FEARLESS. That's limited to 5 sets, but you'll save a ton of money while getting the fruits and vegetables you need in your diet. Go to balanceofnature.com and use the promo code FEARLESS for 35% off. That's balanceofnature.com. Steve, 6 quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks. Bo Nix, I believe, was number 12. Obviously, Caleb Williams, 1. Jaden Daniels, 2. Drake May went at number 3. Michael Penix, 8. J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix. Of all these guys, which one would you pick out and say, that's the guy I'm going to bet my money on? He'll be a huge success story. And which guy will you point to and say, that ain't going to work?
Okay. I'm going to say something that's going to stun you because I'm still not a fan. And look, I'm an old guy. I'm going to scream at the clouds and he still rubs me the wrong way. I think immediately Caleb Williams will have success. Yes, I'm saying it right now. I'm not a fan, but I got to be fair and honest here. This is what we do on Fearless. They have set him up for success in Chicago. I mean, Justin Fields has to be looking right now at that roster and thinking, where was this for me? You got a veteran receiver in Keenan Allen. You got a good running back in Swift. And you got Roma Dunze. I like what Chicago is doing offensively. And if Caleb Williams can just get the ball off on time and play on platform, on schedule, I think he's going to be okay. He's gonna do things that anger me. Me and you are going to talk about it. But I think he's going to be pretty good early on, by the way. The guy that's going to have the toughest time, and I don't like his situation because he's going to have no help. He had the worst offensive skill positions in all of football. Drake May. Drake May at number 3, I think, was a bit of a reach. And Bill Belichick did a breakdown on him, which was a little bit awkward given the fact who drafted him. But Drake May's footwork and his ability to really read and scan the field is a big question mark. And the guy, I think, is going to actually be pretty good based on his circumstances, and he's going to have help immediately. J.J. McCarthy, I know people are doubting his production in Michigan. I'm in the same boat, but he has a bona fide elite player outside, gets to play indoors, and now the shackles are off the Jim Harbaugh offense. And Jaden Daniels, he was actually my quarterback 1 coming in, Jason. My only concern about that guy is a little bit slight, a little bit lean, and he's going to have to know, unlike RG3, when a play is dead and when you're just supposed to let it die. That's my only question mark. But him with Cliff Kingsbury, it's going to be pretty good.
I want to be completely honest. I don't think any of these guys are going to be successful quarterbacks 6 years from now. 6 years from now, we'll be calling this the worst draft class of quarterbacks ever. People made fools of themselves. To sit here, there isn't an Elway, a Marino, a Aaron Rodgers. There isn't a Brett Favre. There's these guys are all overdrafted. And if you go look at that draft,
2021, really? Because that's pretty bad what happened in 2021, Jason. Jeez.
6 in the first 12 is not an indication of the talent. It's an indication of, like, what the league has become. And so what you're going to see early on, some of these guys are going to have success, and they're going to look like the next big thing. But over the course of time, and as defenses figure things out or whatever, I don't see any of these guys. They're all overdrafted. Virtually all of them wore sunglasses last night, including Michael Penix is at home. At home in a sport coat wearing sunglasses, it just rubbed me the wrong way. But beyond all that, look at this draft. I don't think there was a linebacker taken in the first round. There was 1 defensive tackle taken in the first round. There wasn't a safety taken in the first round. And all it speaks to is, like, they're turning this thing into flag football. quarterbacks, edge rushers, and cornerbacks is what everybody was drafting, and a tackle to protect your quarterback. But they've gutted the middle of the NFL, and these guys can get away with, you know, flicking the ball around with these little easy passes in this new NFL. But over the course of the long haul, are these guys, are there any great quarterbacks in this group? I don't see it. You know, the Bo Nix, number 12, are you kidding me? And I know Sean Payton's a good coach. And again, they're going to dress it up. And it'll look good early. None of these guys, you know, won't be able to do it over the long haul. It's no, there's not a Lamar Jackson in this group because, you know, as I sit here today, I think this is the year that the shine starts coming off of Lamar Jackson, that he's peaked, that the whole his whole little deal that he stole an MVP here last year, and I think everybody knows now, like, well, that was kind of sketchy. But yeah, I think these guys have a shelf life of 4 to 6 years, and then none of them really materialize.
Well, Jason, keep this in mind. I think Lamar Jackson, who was the last first-round draft choice of the great Ozzie Newsome, was almost the last pick of the first round. So you want to talk about value.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think he sat for the first year or so.
No. He sat the first half of the year.
Yeah, first and then he took over for Joe Flacco at the end and actually kind of saved Jim Harbaugh's job, if I'm not mistaken. Generally, historically, Jason, taking a look at 1983, you brought that up yesterday. When you have drafts where there's multiple quarterbacks, and let's say in years where there's more than three, generally the bust rate is at least two out of the three guys aren't going to be able to play. I mean, you go back to 1983, Jason, you ought to apologize for your disrespect over Ken O'Brien. I get it. The Jets should have had Marino, but Ken O'Brien made Pro Bowls. He had some big years. He got sacked all the time. The only guy that didn't work, that did not have a really good career, from the 83 class is Todd Blackledge. When Kansas City was just an absolute pit, it didn't work out, but he's gone on to some pretty good things. But if you look at a lot of these years, like 1998, I remember with Cade McNown, Donovan McNabb, and some other guys, basically it was only McNabb. And I think maybe Dante Culpepper. Most years, your quarterback success rate is probably one out of every five guys that you draft in the first round have any type of career. So if you go by that, you're right. Out of these six guys, I would say at least four will be guys that you'll be replacing or drafting their replacement in the next 4 to 5 years.
No question about it. Steve, the only team that I felt like really, really good about yesterday, last night, my Kansas City Chiefs. They replace. They find their Tyreek Hill. They solve, hopefully, their wide receiver situation. They get the guy that's run the fastest 40, I think, in combine history, in this Xavier Worthy. And it's exactly what they needed. And you know, we saw them win a Super Bowl without any wide receivers. Now with Hollywood Brown and now this young kid coming in, even if he just takes the top off the defense with his speed – and opens up throwing lanes for Travis Kelce, who's, you know, coming towards the end of his career. That's going to be just the threat of his speed. Now, he can't be, I'm trying to think of who, Sky Moore, I think they drafted a year or two ago or a couple years ago to kind of play this role, and he's been a bust. He's, you know, hadn't held onto the ball. I don't see this kid being that type of a bust. You know, it's amazing. The Buffalo Bills were involved in this trade that allowed Kansas City to go out and get this kid. That seems crazy, but that's I feel real good about Patrick Mahomes with some speed out on the outside between this kid and Hollywood Brown. Chiefs, look, I'm gonna go full Dave Portnoy and go lay some serious money on the Chiefs repeating as Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, I was stunned Buffalo did this, given the fact if you think this is a main AFC rival and you've not been able to get over the hump, if you've lost wide receivers, what are they going to do, run the Veer or the Wishbone with Josh Allen? But as for the Chiefs, when it comes to the X-Man, He's not going to be an every down guy that catches 75 passes a year. He's awfully slight, but you cannot teach 4-2-1. And if you look at some of the games, specifically the one against Alabama I was watching, Alabama could not stay with him. And he ran a deep post. He takes the top off the defense. And now with Hollywood Brown, Andy Reid now has some legitimate weapons. And this is going to be able to open up the field once again for Travis Kelce. And look, when it comes to being able to scheme up things and putting players in the right position and understanding their role, look, do I think he'll be Tyreek Hill? No, he doesn't have that, the thickness in the body, and he's not as tough. But again, you cannot teach that type of speed. And last year, the Chiefs somehow, with Flotsam and Jetsam outside, won a Super Bowl. Jason, I get the sense Patrick Mahomes is going to have another monster statistical year. And I get the sense, and I think they re-signed Chris Jones up front defensively, they have to be the odds-on favorite in the AFC, do they not?
No question about it. Steve, you talk about can he replace Tyreek Hill, and you're talking about he's not as thick as Tyreek Hill. But he's as quick, and so I think what – one of the questions I think that's going around Kansas City, having lived there like I did for 16 years, is will he be able to replace Tyreek Hill in family court, I think is what a lot of people were talking about. Tyreek Hill announcing he now has 10 kids. Do you see Xavier Worthy being able to keep pace with Tyreek Hill in that regard?
Oh, I hope not. I mean, Tyreek Hill has one more. He's got a starting 11. He gets two more. He's got a nickel back. Oh, by the way, we forgot to mention Rashee Rice. You know he brings the speed. So there's a lot of stuff going out there. We don't need to call back Carlos Carlson or Henry Marshall for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, man. I got to say, in all seriousness, the Tyreek Hill thing, it's just repulsive. It's just, I'm being, in all seriousness, it's got 10 kids, like six baby mamas. I don't know. I've lost count of the baby. He's married and he's had three or four kids in the past year. These guys are just so irresponsible. And so money in you, it's wasted. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to bring your man. You know who's following you today?
Who's this?
Your main man, Scap Attack. Jake Kaepernick.
Well, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Coming on to talk about your Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be good. This is going to be good.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Great job as always. Stay tuned. We're going to talk some Los Angeles Lakers with Jake Kaepernick. You guys know Scap Attack. I think he was on the show earlier this week. We're bringing him back. Scap next. Hello, Fearless Army. I'm Jason Whitlock, your leader. I'm going to spend 2024 discussing growth and sacrifice. Hard times are here. Harder times are coming. What has stopped American growth and caused a regression in fundamental freedoms and values? A lack of sacrifice. Our ancestors sacrificed for our benefit. We have not sacrificed to protect the progress they died for. No sacrifice. No freedom. What impedes man's willingness to sacrifice? His ignorance, his perversion, his pride, his ingratitude, and his cowardice, his rejection of God. The Bible is a story about the power and the necessity of sacrifice. Sacrifice is the sun, rain, and fertilizer of growth. Growth is our life purpose. Grow in the knowledge, wisdom, fear, obedience, and reverence to the Most High. Growth requires sacrifice will be our theme for Roll Call 2.0 this summer, June 1, right back here in Nashville. We're excited to welcome you. Let me spend a minute explaining what G-R-O-W-T-H actually stands for us in the Fearless Army. The G is for game plan. In order to properly grow, it's essential we work from the strategic game plan spelled out in the Bible. The R, responsibility. As we grow as men, we understand and accept our responsibilities to God, family, and teammates. The O, ownership. We embrace ownership of our destiny. Outsiders do not determine our fate. The W, wisdom. We honor, value, and share the wisdom imparted to us by elders, coaches, and leaders. The T, trust. We must be worthy of trust. The reliability of a man's word defines him far more than popularity and material possessions. The H, humility. The reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. That's straight from Proverbs 22:4. Come join us in Nashville as we talk about growth and sacrifice and how without sacrifice, there will be no growth. Roll Call 2.0 right here in Nashville, Saturday, June 1st. All right, welcome back. We're going to bring in our guy, Jay Skapanek. You guys know him as Skapattack. He does a lot of good content related to LeBron James and the NBA. LeBron and the Lakers are on the verge of being swept by the Denver Nuggets. They lost again last night. They're down 0-3. Let's play Skap's video from last night, how he put things in perspective. Let's watch that first.
And speaking of which, the Lakers will now be fighting for their collective lives on Saturday night when they seek to avoid being swept again.
That one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
They are now the 152nd team in NBA history to fall into the dreaded 0-3 series hole, with their predecessors sporting an overall record of 0-151 in this spot. The Nuggets, meanwhile, were methodical in this game, yet surgical with their precision and dominance, as Nikola Jokic had yet another quiet near triple-double, scoring 24 points on 9 of 13 from the field with 15 rebounds and 9 assists. And he continues to assert his dominance over the Fraud King, with the Nuggets just one win away from sending James home without winning a single playoff series for a fourth time in 6 years with the Lakers, the prospect of which will be sure to leave him and his inept fan base clamoring for some fresh scapegoats. But ultimately, the responsibility for these failures falls squarely on him. After all, heavy is the head that wears a fake crown.
So that's the Skapattack. Good job. I'm going to defend LeBron James today, Skap. We're not going to play the video, but LeBron's taking a lot of heat for saying, hey, it's just basketball. And I believe that comment is taken completely out of context. I've watched the entire thing. I heard the question, heard LeBron's explanation, and then he says at the end, it's just basketball. And what he's referring to, in my view, is he's saying, like, I don't know why these guys are choking under the pressure, D'Lo, others on the Lakers team. It's just basketball. You just relax is basically what he's saying. But people are beating him up about it all over social media. I'll defend LeBron in that regard. I don't think his comments were out of line, but your take on what this possible sweep, 11 straight losses to the Denver Nuggets, what does that say about LeBron? Even though, again, he's 40 years old, should we not be cutting him a little bit of slack?
Well, Jason, thanks for having me on again. I wanted to wear a different color shirt, a distinctly different color shirt today, just to make sure that your viewers know that this isn't just a repeat of what we talked about just a few days ago, because this is just a running narrative for LeBron. Essentially, it's just a pervasive narrative that has been dogging him throughout his entire career. And yes, now he stands on the precipice of yet another sweep. This will be the second consecutive sweep at the hands of the Denver Nuggets. And look, we discussed it yesterday, but just to echo my sentiments from then, LeBron James is still being bandied about as if he constitutes a top 10 player in today's league. Therefore, if we're still going to look at him throughout the lens as if he were a top 10 player still now, why is it unreasonable to demand that he plays as such when his team desperately needs him? In game two, when we spoke last, it was his disappearing act in the fourth quarter. Last night, it was in the third quarter. That was kind of the turning point of last night's game. And Jason, it's kind of the responsibility of the all-time great player to read the game and know what his team needs when they need it. Last night, they needed him to come out with a sustained effort and tenacity in the third quarter. And quite frankly, he just didn't have it. The Lakers were up 4 at half, and the Nuggets came out and hit them with a flurry in that third quarter. During that span of time, LeBron James attempted 2 shots. His first one did not come until midway through the third at the 6:26 mark, and he ended the quarter with just 2 points. The Nuggets turned that 4-point deficit at half into an 8-point advantage going into the fourth quarter, and it was a wrap from there.
Scap, I all of that's fair, and you made a great argument. Like, hey, we call him a top 10 player, so let's evaluate him like a top 10 player. If you're saying he's top 20, we'll evaluate him like a top 20 player, but we're saying top 10 player in the league. Here's what I do think where this is going to end up leading to, because it seems clear to me he's not going to get a fifth title before his career winds down, unless he goes and cherry picks one. Maybe whoever wins this year's title, he'll go join their team. I don't know. But what's going to end up happening is, because of this insistence on trying to debate whether he's Michael Jordan, he's going to open the door for the Kobe fans to say he ain't Kobe Bryant. And so he's going to go from what many people thought was clear number two to where he could back himself up and end up number 4, 5, or 6. And I'm not joking. Tim Duncan, he's got 5 titles. Again, people are going to start making arguments and start, you know, really expanding who LeBron's compared to. And Kobe Bryant is going to be first and foremost on that list. Kobe has 5 titles. Kobe, you know, became even more beloved in death. I think more is at stake here than the LeBron Jordan debate. It's like, oh, you're about to lose the LeBron Kobe debate as well.
Yeah, it's a great point, Jason. I mean, people look at Kobe Bryant and there's some revisionism going on about those first 3 titles he had with Shaq. Kobe was a top 3 to 4 player on the planet in those first 3 titles. You know, he led the fourth quarter in clutch scoring in 2 of those 3 playoff runs and championship runs. He led the team in assists, and he averaged only 1 fewer point per game than Shaq during the 4 finals runs that they made together, winning 3 of them. I mean, Kobe was the best perimeter player. He was all NBA caliber and all NBA first team defense. He routinely took the best perimeter player and shut them down on the other end. So when you look at Kobe's career in the totality of it, this is a guy who in the peak, his 10-year peak, he made an All-NBA team 10 straight times. He led the decade in scoring in both points per game and total points scored, and he made 9 All-NBA defensive teams during that 10-year span as well, while going and winning 5 NBA championships and 7 appearances. That is a hell of a decade stretch from a peak standpoint, one that, in my humble opinion, does eclipse LeBron James. And as you noted, it's not just Kobe. I mean, Duncan has not only the 5 rings, he beat LeBron 2 times head-to-head out of 3. You know, Magic has the 5 championships as well. Even Steph Curry is going to start insinuating himself into this conversation because he has 4 championships, the same as LeBron James, and he beat LeBron head-to-head in 3 of them in a concurrent era. And many people could argue that Curry impacted and altered and changed this era more than LeBron James, that his fingerprints are more imprinted on the league and the path that they're on right now than LeBron James ever was. So, You're right. If he does not get, if he does not cherry pick or coattail himself into a fifth championship somewhere along the line, it is certainly going to leave the door open for many others to come and seek his throne out.
And this is where I fault LeBron. Again, I don't think he said anything wrong last night, but his insistence on injecting himself into the LeBron versus Jordan debate, he took a position on that where Michael Jordan, from my understanding, has never taken a position on who the best player is. He just let his play and resume speak for itself. He never was like, I'm better than Bill Russell, or I'm better, you know, I won three-peated twice in a row, that made me the GOAT. He never did it. LeBron injected himself into it, took a public position on it. And so now, again, I just think people are going to be less sympathetic as they start backing him up and start like, because, and look, I'm going to tell you how far this could get. And maybe it really should, because there'll be people like, well, you know, if Larry Bird hadn't got hurt and his back hadn't given out, I mean, are we sure LeBron was really better than Larry Bird? Are we sure we had the same kind of impact? And again, you'll someone like me is going to come in at some point, and I've already done it and laid the groundwork. It's like when you start putting yourself in this GOAT conversation, you know, what did you do for the league? Did you leave the league better than you found it? And that's what I think is the biggest hole in LeBron's entire argument. The ratings have never peaked with him like they did with Jordan and like they did with Magic and Larry when they first came aboard. And then this player entitlement era that they call player empowerment era, it's the player entitlement era. LeBron James did that. And so he just isn't elevating the game. And so when I start talking about all-time greats, and again, you can go all the way back to Bill Russell, elevated the game. LeBron did not.
Jason, it's far worse than what you think, probably. The final game Michael Jordan played in a Chicago Bulls uniform, the 1998 Game 6, where he won his sixth and final NBA championship, that game peaked out at 36 million viewers. The sham bubble tournament in the Disney campus, what I like to call as the exhibition tournament disguised as an NBA championship, where LeBron James, the legendary LeBron James, won his fourth and likely will be his final NBA championship. Not one single game eclipsed the 9 million viewer mark. And it had, I believe, an average rating of 7 million per game. That is absolutely laughable and pathetic. We're in an era right now where Caitlin Clark, a female college basketball player, just got a 19 million view share in the NCAA championship game. I mean, even her semifinal game had 14 or 15 million. The top NBA game this year, I believe, was the play-in game. The last metrics that I saw was the first play-in game with around 5 million. So we're talking about a female college player doubling and tripling NBA ratings right now. That is LeBron's legacy. That, along with, as you noted, the player empowerment. He is the father of it, of the super team era as well, basically whittling down and diminishing competitive excellence by these players. Everybody just wants to go and get the easy championship and stack these meaningless rings to try to inflate what their legacy is. It's absolutely pathetic. There is such a sense of entitlement, and it all began with LeBron James. This era has played follow his leader.
Just remember at the start of this, I defended LeBron's comments from last night. So it hasn't all been just me piling on LeBron. I want the audience to remember that. But what you're talking about, Scap, with the player entitlement, the player ring chasing era, it's destroyed someone as beautiful to watch play. I like him just as a person, but it destroyed Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's, because he got caught up in the title chasing, ring chasing, he diminished himself, diminished his legacy. The guy's one of the funnest. I mean, he could have been the 6'11" Steph Curry. Instead, he's got a negative reputation because, you know, he went and stole some titles with the Golden State Warriors following the LeBron blueprint. And now, you know, he's out here on his own at 34, 35 in Phoenix, and not even out here on his own, but just, you know, the Phoenix is struggling, and his reputation is getting diminished. And I just think about Russell Westbrook, his reputation diminished. James Harden, LeBron, who in this era, other than Steph Curry, is going to have the kind of legacy that they were supposed to have? I can't think of anybody that, you know, because Joel Embiid's MVP looks like trash because again, LeBron has been a big part of injecting the racial dynamic into all NBA discussions, and LeBron's created a mess. And you know, people will watch this content and they'll get very upset with me, but I'm just telling you, it's a mess, and it all relates back to LeBron James.
It all started in his free agency, where he took his talents to South Beach. He gave it a go for 7 years in Cleveland. He failed miserably. He couldn't accept the challenge.
Whoa, stop, Scat. Failed miserably. He led the team to a title. It didn't go as well as he thought. Continue. Go ahead. Failed miserably.
Real quick on the final that he led the team to. He did not play a winning team until the conference finals in that Eastern Conference Finals run. The Nets and the Wizards were both 41-41 that season. The Cavaliers were the second seed with 50 wins that year. The one seed was the Detroit Pistons with only 53 wins. The Cavaliers were a top five net rated defensive team that season, and they beat the Detroit Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals without Ben Wallace. He had moved on. He was playing in Chicago at that point. So really the only team that he beat in that 2007 Finals run was the Detroit Pistons without their heart and soul, their defensive anchor, Ben Wallace. Then he got into the finals against the Spurs, where, again, the Cavs defense did their job, Jason. They held the San Antonio Spurs to 88 points per game in that NBA Finals series in 2007. Yet LeBron got swept in that series as he shot 36% for the series and averaged 22 points per game. Completely and totally unacceptable. Two games were there for the taking. But again, it started right then and right there. The next 2 years, he comes back. He wins the league MVP, has the best record in the NBA, not the next year, but in 2008 and 2009. He has the best record in the NBA for 2 years. He's favored to get into the finals. He's the league MVP, and he goes out early both years. The 1 year, yes, they got caught up against Boston, who you could say had more talent, had a better team. But the other season, he lost to the Dwight Howard Orlando Magic. Got upset there. They went in, and then Kobe, of course, wins the two championships those two seasons against the two very teams that sent LeBron packing. Kobe's winning real hardware while LeBron is stealing those league MVPs. And then on the heels of those failures, he takes his talents to South Beach because he could not live up to the pressure. He could not live up to the standards. And the deal that all of the other all-time great players got basically throughout the time, the dawn, from the very dawn of basketball history, the deal that they had, he could not live up to. So he had to break the system. He had to go and daisy chain talent onto this already, you know, budding superstar in Dwayne Wade, who was first team all NBA at the time, finishing top five perennially in MVP voting himself. They bring on Chris Bosh. And then from there, it was just on. This guy's been mercenarying himself out from team to team, trying to steal cheap championships. And what it has done is it has diminished what a championship means. Titles are hard. It's supposed to be difficult. That it's the hero's journey. It builds the character. It makes them great. LeBron cheated himself to some degree by sidestepping all the obstacles, by taking the easy way out routinely, time in and time out. He never got to the level that he could have if he faced the challenges and overcame them, like all the other all-time greats we've seen before him.
Gap, if any, you're prepared, I will say that. Great job. Thank you so much. We'll probably hear from you next week after it's 0-4 and he swept. That's Gap Attack. Check him out on YouTube. That's it, and that's all for us. We'll play some tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow. Very special show on Saturday. Me and Chamika talk about Amanda Seales and Shannon Sharp, Club Shay Shay's interview. Good stuff. We'll see you tomorrow. Came like a fighter, striking like a ladder, making all this moves for freedom. I want freedom. No negotiation, my sister, no relation. We all just want to have freedom. Sitting on a corner, never been alone. I'm breaking my back for freedom. Bless, we are living, get back. We are receiving, all deceiving. We all want to be free. We want freedom. I just want to be. I just want to be. I just want.